Okay, so first of all, I would like to thank very much the organizers for giving me the opportunity to speak here. It's a very nice conference, beautiful city, Toronto. It's a great pleasure to be here. Okay, so I'm going to talk about joint work with Daryl Duffy, who's going to be here, as I just learned yesterday in spring, giving talk also about this kind of stuff, and Gustavo Manso from MIT Sloan. And I'm going to give you, this is going to be maybe kind of an overview talk about this new model, new set of models that we're working on together with Daryl and Gustavo called information percolation, okay? So Paolo made a wonderful job introducing us into these things, it's a crisis and market imperfections, etc. And so I agree completely with his point and the point of Cochrane that we need a better understanding of market imperfections, how the markets actually function. And he presented also, there was a world equilibrium mentioned there, that the true phenomena that we observe in the world, the true phenomena that we observe in the market, these are equilibrium phenomena, okay? So it means that market has lots of participants that somehow interact with each other, and prices and crises and everything that we see come out of these interactions, okay? And so this is what I believe, and many economists believe, is the big goal of the economics now, is to understand how these various equilibrium phenomena function, okay? So these models that we have developed deal with information transmission in markets, okay? So it is well known that prices have a very important informational role. There's this big theory of market efficiency that claims that prices that we observe in the market should theoretically reveal large part or maybe all of the information that the market participants have, okay? So there is a strong form efficiency, weak form efficiency, etc. So when we have centralized exchanges, if I submit an order, the price will react, there is a demand goes up, the price will go up, so I will reveal at least part of the information that I have, and everybody will see it, okay? So in centralized exchange, prices present a very nice and very useful form, for a very useful tool for revealing the information. But the situation is completely different in decentralized exchanges. And a huge part of modern existing markets are decentralized. They're over-the-counter markets. For example, CDO markets, large part of bond markets, they're over-the-counter. In over-the-counter markets, when I trade with Damir, Nizar will not know the prices that we negotiated on. And so even though there was an information transmission during our communication, nobody else will see it. Sometimes there are like Bloomberg terminals where past average transition price or something like that is revealed, so you can see some indicators of other transactions, but not all information is being revealed, okay? So we see it as a big challenge to understand the way over-the-counter markets function, and this set of models presents, as Paolo would say, the very, very first step into that direction, okay? Try to understand how over-the-counter markets function, okay? So what does today's paper do? So we try to build a tractable model of information diffusion over the counter markets with investor segmentation by preferences, initial information connectivity. We should specify a trading mechanism or a bargaining mechanism. Yeah, so when I meet Damir and we start trading, we have heterogeneous information. So suppose we want to trade a CDO, okay? We don't know what the true price of the CDO is, and for some reason, suppose I have an incentive to sell a CDO and he has an incentive to buy it. So during this bargaining procedure, he will reveal part of the information that he has on the CDO. I will reveal part of my information. We somehow will negotiate a price. So it turns out that in many over-the-counter markets, the mechanism through which the price is generated is a so-called double auction mechanism. So the double auction mechanism is as follows. So he submits he's the buyer. So he submits a bid, and I submit an ask, and then a K double auction is that, so he submits a B and I submit an A, and the price at which we trade is K times B plus 1 minus K times A. Okay, so this is called a K double auction. It's basically an arithmetic average of our values of this. Okay, and the trade only happens if his valuation is higher than mine. So if he is willing to pay for the price at least as much as I am asking for this asset, then the trade happens. Otherwise, we say, sorry, goodbye, and I'm looking for another counterparty. Okay, so this is how the double auction functions. So this is, yeah, Okay, so we're going to investigate in particular inside this model effects of information connectivity on profits, where the more informed, more connected investors attain high expected profits and less informed, less connected investors, if they can disgrace the trade. Okay, I'm going to make this explicit later. And more informed, more connected investors may not attain high expected profits if characteristics are commonly observed. Okay, I'm going to come back to this precise meaning of this later. Okay, so this outline of the talk. So the model primitive, so the very first model information percolation is about 3 years old now. It was built by Duffy and Manson. Then there is a subsequent work, which is actually all almost same time, but it only come in publication this year, of Duffy, Giroux, and Manson. So there's a continuum of agents. Okay, this is an abstraction. It means that there's a very, very large market. I don't know, maybe a few thousand participants at least. There are two possible states of nature. This is, again, abstraction. This could be easily modified. You can have many states, but then it gets substantially more complicated. So each agent is initially endowed with signals. Okay, so I observe signals. I ask some consultants. I have some market analysts in my firm. I'm reading some newspapers, etc., and they give me signals about the true value of the asset that I have or the one that I want to buy. And for every pair of, this is an important assumption, for every pair of agents, their initial signals are conditionally dependent given the value of Y. Okay, so the value of Y is like the true payoff of the assets that I'm going to expect. I don't know what the true value is, but it's already realized. So that's the state of the world that I'm trying to discover. So every time I communicate, I'm calculating basically the true probability of the true outcome of this random variable Y of common interest. This random matching with intensity lambda. What does it mean? It means that every instant of time, somehow, so there is a huge population of agents, every instant of time, a pair of agents is randomly picked, and this is a Poisson arrival with intensity lambda. Okay, so these two guys are picked, they're matched, there's a double auction between them. If the trade happens, it happens. They say goodbye, and this process continues. Okay, so the key observation of Duffy and Manson is there's a very nice mathematical structure in this information transition that makes it possible to derive a very beautiful evolution equation describing the cross-sectional distribution of information in the population. And this is the key discovery, basically, that makes all this analysis possible, and namely the following. So suppose that I'm observing certain signals. All I need to calculate is the log, I mean, all that matters is my posterior probability. What is my belief that the Y is equal to 1 and not to 0? Okay, so just one number, I want to learn this probability. How is this probability updated given the set of signals? Then a simple application of Bayes' rule tells you that the following is true. So basically, all I need to know is this type, okay, type theta, which is additive across the signals. What it means is that, okay, so as I said, upon meeting, agents participate in a double auction. If bids are strictly increasing in type, then, and if I know the bid function of my opponent, then I will learn his type from his bid, okay? So this is important. Clearly, that Damir's bid for the asset will depend on the information that he has. So if his bid is a strictly increasing function, and I somehow know what the functional form of the bid, I will simply, you know, take the inverse function, I will uncover his information and update my beliefs about the true value of Y. Okay? So that's the key thing. The key thing is that I don't really need to know the true values of the signals that Damir has observed. All I need to know is his type. Because in the end, whether I actually knew all the signals that he observed, the values, or I just knew his type, I will just update my type by adding Damir's type to my type, to my informational type. That's it. Okay? So this is, yeah, and by induction, this property holds for all subsequent meetings. And here comes the main equation. Okay? So that's the this equation describes how the cross-sectional distribution of information evolves through time in the population. Okay? So where does the equation come from? What does it mean? So this is the rate of the change. Yeah. So mu t is the measure that describes mu t of an interval is the fraction of the population that have types inside whose values are inside this interval. And where does the change in this cross-sectional distribution come from? So every instant of time, two agents meet. Yeah. So every instant of time, these agents, when they meet, and if they reveal their types, then they will lose their types. So agents of the old kind of types will vanish from the population. This is the minus lambda mu t term. So every instant of time, there is a randomly picked guy. He had type distributed with mu t. So this is a replacement rate, minus lambda mu. Where does the new term come from? Now remember that types are additive, okay? So if where does a new agent with a type theta come from? If there's a new agent with type theta, it means that this guy comes from a meeting of an agent with type phi minus x and x, because they add up. So there was some guy with type phi minus x, there was some guy with type x, they met, and the guy of type phi was created, and now you should average over all possible x's. So you take an integral, it's a convolution. So that's where the second term comes from. Okay? So this is, the equations of this type appear also in statistical physics. This is the so-called Stostal-Ansatz, and this is called the Boltzmann evolution equation. It exists in particle statistical physics. Okay, I'm not going into that, but there are also tools for solving this equation, because a priori it's not quite obvious that the solution exists. This is an equation in measures, yeah? So it's an integral equation. You can actually solve it, and the solution is given by the so-called wild sum. Wild, not because it's wild, but it's the name of the guy who invented this method. So you can write it as an infinite series of convolutions of the initial cross-sectional distribution of information with itself. So basically, this has a very clear economic meaning. Because basically, what you see, what is the mu zero times star mu zero? That's the part of agents that have only meet once, okay? Mu zero. If you meet two different people, it's mu zero, star mu zero, three different times, mu zero, star mu zero, etc. Yeah, so there will be always, every instant of time, there will be guys who have already met five counterparties, six, etc. That's where these terms come from. So that's a very clear economic interpretation. Okay, so the proof is very simple. All you do, you take a Fourier transform or Laplace transform, whatever you do, you know that convolution transform into products, and so you get a Riccati ODE, so you solve for the Fourier transform, then you expand it, and then you transform back. Okay, so it's very, very easy. Okay, so you can also extend it to multi-agent meetings, allowing for many agents to participate in this meetings. Same argument, just take Fourier transform, then transform back, etc. Okay, so here is a numerical example of what happens. So you start with some cross-sectional distribution information. So the red columns, they show you the fraction of the population that have this posterior belief. So their conditional probability that the outcome is 1 is equal to 0.7, etc. So the red ones correspond to when there are meetings of three people in the group. So it's group 3. And the blue columns correspond to the case when there are only two agents meeting, okay? So obviously when there are more agents meeting every time, the information will spread out faster, okay? So this is what you see. You see that they are higher. And so here's what's going on. More and more people learn the true state. And you see that eventually almost everybody learns the true state. If the true state was 1, then eventually the information gets percolated through the population, and eventually almost everybody's posterior converges to 1. So you can actually solve this equation on the computer, though I would be scared to implement it, but somebody did it, so okay. The framework is very flexible, so you can use various things there. You can introduce a new private information so every instant agents would get new private information whose outcome is distributed with some probability measure. Again, you can Fourier transform, you can get this, okay? So, there are many possible extensions. One very interesting extension is to introduce endogenous search intensity, okay? Because in the true world, if there is a guy sitting in the bank and he decides he wants to trade some security, or his boss tells him he has to trade, he can decide optimally on how intensely he will look for counterparties for trading, okay? And usually, especially in bond markets that are extremely opaque, search costs are very high, so it's costly to search, okay? So this will be an optimization problem. You will have to decide what are the informational gains that you're going to get versus the costs. So you can solve this problem. In this case, the situation gets quite complex because your search intensity will depend on the amount of information that you've already gathered. The more information you have, the smaller will be the incentive for you to search for new information. You can describe also equilibrium in such a game where different people search, and so it's but this is not in this talk. That's a very first paper of ours. I'm going to talk to you a little bit about public information releases. So this is a very important, as I said, there are things like this Bloomberg terminal where even for over-the-counter markets, you see some kind of average statistic, or even sometimes through trades, some of the trades you see them, or some very big trades, you can actually observe them from newspapers or whatever. So this is what we wanted to understand. So we allow that public information releases is getting released at random times, again, also on arrival with some exogenous intensity eta. And here we extend the percolation equation that you've seen just a few slides before to the maximal generality. So we're now for any number of agents, it might be that only two agents meet during this trade, or three agents, anything, yeah? So meetings of group size M happen with this probability, completely arbitrary. And public information release group size. So what it means is that every instance of time there's a Poisson arrival and a random number of agents are picked from the population and they announce their types. Again, this might be that I just announced my type, or maybe there was a trade between this agent and the outcome of this trade has been published by Bloomberg or something like that. Okay, so you can again write down evolution equation for this. It's, well, not difficult if you play a little bit. So here it is, it's a little bit more complex. You cannot solve it closed form anymore because you get some complicated ODEs, but what you can do, and it turns out there's a very nice structure there, you can calculate the rates of convergence. Okay, so what you have seen from that, from those plots, is that eventually all the information gets revealed. Okay, this is the kind of informational efficiency. Even though the market is decentralized, I meet Damir, I learn from him, then I meet Nizar, I learn from him, and he learns from me, and so it percolates, etc. How quickly is this happening? Okay, you can actually calculate the rate, and it turns out that there's a very interesting discontinuity happening there. So suppose that there are both private and public information releases. So private means I'm still trading with some counterparties that nobody sees, and also there are information releases. That if both channels of information percolation are present, then the convergence to the full revelation is exponential, which the rate is just the sum of the two rates, the rate of pairwise meetings and the rate. Okay, so this, which is very intuitive. But what it turns out is that if lambda is equal to zero, so there are no private meetings, only public information releases, there's a discontinuity in the rate. Furthermore, the rate is crazy because it not only depends on the initial distribution of information in some very non-trivial way, it also depends on the state where the value of the y is y, 1 or 0, okay? So it's something very strange. And it is always strictly smaller than eta. So it means that this private information transmission channel, actually, everybody benefits from it, yeah? Because information gets revealed faster. So pure public information revelation is bad in that sense, okay? So this was that, but this was again an excursus to another paper, but today's paper, I just wanted to give you kind of an overview of different directions where you can pursue the research in this class of models. But here I'm going to talk about, well, that's the title of the talk, it is called Information Percolation in Segmented Markets, okay? So what are segmented markets? We assume that there are N classes of investors. Agent of class I has a matching intensity lambda I with the rest of the population. And upon meeting, the probability that class J agent is selected as a counterpart is kappa ij. So what it means is that I'm trading for UBS, it's a big Swiss bank, and I have a lot of trades, maybe with, I don't know, Bank of America, but maybe less trades with Lehman Brothers, etc. Okay, so there are certain intensities with which I trade with this particular counterpart. So you could think of it as a kind of a very stylized model of a network, okay, where there are some connections are very strong, but there was a lot of trade, some connections. So this intensity is kappa ij, measure the strength of connection between sector I and sector J of the market. Okay? I've been there already. Yeah. So again, you can write down the same evolution equation. It's very easy. It's very similar to what you've just seen. It's just that instead of one, you have now the average and weighted with this intensity. Yeah. So again, you can take Fourier transforms, so you just get a system of ODEs for the cross-sectional distributions of information for each type. So psi it is the cross-sectional distribution of information types for class I at time t. Okay. So in general, it is impossible to solve this system in closed form. There are some special cases. Just here's just an example. So like, there are two classes and identical intensities. You can solve it. So in general, when intensities are identical, even there are more classes, you can solve it in closed form. When intensities are heterogeneous, you cannot. At least we haven't been able to find a single this is solvable example. But you can still write down this kind of wild sum summation expansion. So basically, in that case, you will get that cross-section distribution will be again a sum of infinite convolutions of initial distribution information from different classes, and those will be just some deterministic functions of time that solve an analogous system of ODEs. Okay, so this system, in fact, can be solved in closed form recursively. Okay, so you can also calculate asymptotics, etc. But this is not our goal here. What we want to understand this double log. Okay, so we imagine that there is some terminal horizon. Maybe you are doing some day trading, for example. Then your terminal horizon is the closing of the market. Maybe you are trading futures, and then your terminal has the maturity or options as the maturity of the asset. Okay, so at some and T, the economy ends, and that's how much money you're gonna get in the end. Okay, so it's important that the agent should have, for some reasons that are not explicitly modeled here, the agents who should have different valuations of the asset. There is a famous theorem of Milgram and Stocky, the so-called no-trade theorem, that says that it is impossible to get trade if you only have informational asymmetries. Okay, in such double auction general auction mechanism, you cannot have trade. The only difference between me and Damir is beliefs, we will not trade. Only if our intrinsic valuations of the assets are different. This might be for tax reasons, liquidity reasons, whatever. There might be lots of sources of these different valuations. Okay? So here it is. So this is what you do. So basically, I'm taking, so this is here, this comes, so the standard Nash equilibrium stuff. So I take Damir's ask as given, and I'm choosing my optimal bid, and I'm choosing my optimal ask function, and he takes my ask function as given, and he chooses his optimal bid, and then you have to show that an equilibrium exists, etc. It turns out that in such double auctions, it is very difficult to get strictly increase in equilibria, which is interesting by itself, which might mean that in the real world, maybe people do not bid something that is strictly monotone increase. Maybe after you reach some level, you will just bid something concept. We don't know what the true, but what we can say is that if you don't have a strictly monotone increasing, then there will be information revelation will not go the way we want it. Yes, so we cannot then do anything. Okay, so we need a strictly increasing equilibrium, and in particular, we're very lucky that in this particular model we can construct a strictly increasing equilibrium, though it's related to quite a lot mathematical technical difficulties. I'm going to tell you about a little bit later. So I'm going to assume, so this is basically a technical assumption. This is kind of a symmetry assumption that makes things nice. Okay, we can also do without it, but then the answers become really ugly. So in the end, we deleted that part of the paper and left only this, just as because it's a benchmark example. So if you impose this assumption, it turns out that the cross-sectional distribution information satisfies these very nice symmetry properties. Okay, and in particular, the nice thing is that the symmetry properties, they are preserved under mixing and convolutions, okay? So in particular, if at time zero, the cross-sectional distribution satisfies, these are densities now, I'm sorry, I forgot that they are not measures, but densities of the measures. So if they satisfy these symmetry properties at time zero, they will always satisfy it also at positive times. And another very important property, and this is crucial for the existence of equilibrium, is that they satisfy this, it's called hazard rate condition. Okay, so the hazard rate in the high state is higher than the hazard rate in the low state. Okay, that's a simple calculation. Okay, so here's the main ODE that we will need here. So you fix it at V0, and then you can write down this ODE. You can, that's easy. I mean, if the right hand side is nice and smooth, so you have a solution. What we will need is to, and I will explain you later why, we will need the limit of the solution when the initial condition, V0, goes to minus infinity. The funny thing is that it turns out that even though the initial condition goes to minus infinity, the solution itself converges to something. It doesn't run to minus infinity itself. So it becomes something. So you have this goes to minus infinity, but the solution itself converges to something. This is a nice function. It's differentiable. It still solves this ODE. And now we can start characterizing the equilibrium. So first of all, we describe the necessary conditions. So suppose that you have a continuous equilibrium. You don't even need to require that it's smooth, just continuous. Such that this condition is satisfied. So basically it means that I'm never asking more than my highest possible valuation, which is a natural assumption. Then you can actually show that the bid must be characterized as being the inverse of the solution to this ODE. Okay, so this ODE characterizes the optimal bid function, and then the ask function is given by this. Okay. So basically, all equilibria, if they are equilibria, they're parameterized by this single number, V0, the initial condition for the ODE. Okay. So we have characterized the candidate equilibria. Now we'll have to show that they're indeed equilibria, and this is not easy. We'll have to impose some technical conditions. So we'll say that the probability density is of exponential type if it basically behaves at infinity as power of x times e to something. Okay. Amazingly, it turns out, so the first, I'll tell you the story. The story is that we first discovered this exponential tail condition when we were playing with this ODE. It turns out that the ODE has nice, regularly behaving solution when V0 goes to infinity, precisely when this exponential tail condition is satisfied. Which was, okay, yeah, it's a technical condition. But the amazing thing is that it turns out that the percolation equation, for some mysterious and I would say miraculous reasons, somehow likes this. And what happens is the following. Let's take the simplest case where there's no, the very first percolation equation is just one class, one lambda, etc. Yeah, so then you can solve for the Fourier transform in closed form. It turns out that whatever the initial cross-section distribution information is, doesn't matter, anything that has exponential moments, at least for some values, okay? Take any distribution, even finite support or Gaussian, anything. If you let information percolate just a little bit, it immediately gets exponential tail. Which is a miracle. I don't understand why this happens. But obviously, somehow, this exponential tail condition plays a crucial role in the structure of the solution to the percolation equation. We don't understand why. So the proof is based on the so-called Tauberian theorems, where basically you can derive the asymptotic behavior of a function from the asymptotic behavior of its Fourier transform. Okay. So here, the problem is that what we will need is the very, very strong Tauberian theorem, the so-called complex Tauberian theorems. Unfortunately, this means that for many classes, we cannot prove the right tail condition, because the so-called, we can usually use the real Tauberian theorems, but the complex ones are very hard to use. So we can do it for some special cases that, as examples, but not in general. Say that's an open problem. Maybe I will talk about it a little bit in the end of the talk. Okay, so here comes the main existence result. So we assume that the cross-section distribution information does have this exponential tail condition under certain constraints. Furthermore, what we need is that my valuation and Damir's valuation are sufficiently different from each other, okay? Remember that if we have the same valuation, there will be no equilibrium. But it turns out also that if the difference in valuations is very small, there will be no equilibrium. It must be sufficiently large. When we run it on the computer, the sufficiently large turns out to be not really large. But mathematically, what we do, we send it to infinity. I mean, that's what mathematically means sufficiently large. And we prove that, yeah, there will be some huge threshold. But, yeah, when you run on the computer, you see the threshold is actually very small, but I don't know why. Okay, so... Okay, so mathematically what you show is that when it's you can make it so large that yes, there will be a strictly increasing equilibrium that will correspond to V0 equal to minus infinity. Okay? And it is unique. This is a very hard thing because it involves two very important Yes. So it involves. It involves two very important elements. So the first thing. Thanks, Nisa. So the first thing is that this is an extremely single solution. You're looking at a very single end of the ODE, so it's not at all clear that it has a unique solution. Okay, so we can prove uniqueness. It requires quite a lot of analysis. But then, to prove that a monotone equilibrium exists, basically what you need is here. You need the monotonicity of this guy. Okay, so you know that this guy is going to be solving that ODE. But now it means that you need very sharp bounds of the derivative of this guy, okay, so that it doesn't kill the monotonicity of this, and this is still monotone, okay? So this is quite hard, okay? It requires a lot. There are multiple scales where you have to control the singularity in different places and get the right bounds, which are uniform in this difference in valuations, okay? So that's the mathematical difficulty. Okay. So, okay, now we have the equilibrium, so we know it's actually unique. So if agents do agree that they should be strictly monotonic, there's a unique equilibrium, information percolation works, so now we can discuss quantitative implications of the model. So you can calculate the future expected profits, so basically you just add up and sum up over all future meetings, and the meetings happen at Poisson arrival times, and then every time you meet somebody, you calculate your expected profit using this double auction solution. And here comes the first thing. And that's the case when trades, so-called, the economists say, trades can be disgreased. So what does it mean? Suppose that I am trading with Damir and with Nizar. And Nizar works for UBS and Damir works for some Croatian bank. Obviously, Nizar will be much better informed. Yeah, he will have much better connections. He will know much better, more information, etc. Yeah? Whereas Damir will probably have less information. Now the question is, probably under some situations, I would like to ask more money from Nizar because I know he's better informed. I probably charge him more. Yeah. So when I decide on my optimal ask function, I will probably charge him more. So there might be an incentive for Nizar to disguise his trade, maybe to trade through some brokers to hide his identity, so that I could not distinguish him from Damir, and then I would have to charge the same ask function to both Nizar and Damir because they're disguising their trades. So the question is, what happens in that case? And the first statement is that if Nizar is better connected and if he is disguising the trade, and also Damir, so everybody is disguising, so I can't identify whether you're trading for UBS or Credit Suisse or Croatian bank, then Nizar will always be better off. Okay. So if you have more connectivity, you are more connected, you're better connected, you have more better information, and you can disguise this so that I cannot identify it, then you are always better off, which is a very natural result. So this is a very general result, some very general monotonicity argument. But now what happens if characteristics are commonly observed? Yeah? Then I will, of course, the ask function that I'm going to trade with Nizar is going to be different than that I'm going to trade with Damir, yeah? Because I know that they have different information, different connectivity, so I'm going to charge them differently. And it turns out that, yes, you can build a counterexample when being better informed makes you worse off. Because I know that he's better informed, so I will charge him a higher price, and in the end he will lose money because of that. So he will have a strong incentive to disguise his trade and hide and actually claim that he is from Croatia. Okay, so here's an example. So basically here you see that it should be the other way around. So the red line is the price I'm charging to the better informed guy. And you see that I'm charging more on average. Yeah, I'm charging more to the better informed guy. Therefore, the better informed guy is worse off. Okay? But it turns out again that this depends on the size of the spread between our valuations. So that counterexample only works if the difference between our valuation is not too large. But if the difference in valuations is sufficiently large, it turns out that still, even if I know who is from UBS and who is from Credit Suisse and who is from Croatia, still, the guy who's better informed, the guy who's better connected, will be better off, okay? Which is quite a surprising result, yeah? But and we do not exactly understand why this is happening economically, but mathematically what we do, we can actually calculate again, well, what do? We send something to infinity, yeah, that because there's no closed form here. So we take this difference in valuations, we send it to infinity, and you can actually calculate the asymptotic behavior, just like Paolo did it, you can calculate the asymptotic behavior of the expected profits. And the leading term, you calculate it, and you see that for the better informed, for the better connected guy, it is higher. Okay? So this is again connected with substantial mathematical difficulties because of this extreme singular behavior of the solution. You have to identify again regions in which you can neglect. You have to construct these bounds because you're calculating expectations of something that behaves extremely singular, blows up in some places. So it requires a lot. It's about 20 pages of estimates to derive this. But the outcome is yes. So you need some technical condition. The outcome is yes. So if the difference in valuation is sufficiently high, then the guy who's better informed, better connected, will be better. And I'm coming to the end. Here you can introduce a new economic mechanism that the economists call subsidized order flow. So for example, does it make sense for me? I know that I'm not going to trade with somebody who has the same valuation. Yeah, we know that there will be no trade. Does it make sense for me to create a mechanism still only for the purpose of information transmission? Yeah, when I meet Nizar and I know that he has the same valuation, I know I'm not going to trade with him. But maybe we could do something because I want to learn what he knows. Yeah, so I want to learn his information. So you can design. So basically, you can enter such a kind of a swap contract. Yeah, where you where we arrange that I'm paying to Nizar my valuation minus the true value at the terminal horizon, right, is squared. And the reason why it is squared, because when you I want to minimize my cost, what minimizes it? My conditional expectation of y, right? If I take conditional expectation and want to minimize over this guy, then I'm gonna, so I will tell Nizar what, so if we agree to enter such a swap contract and I can optimally choose this number, then I will just choose my conditional expectation, and then Nizar will learn, and I will also learn his conditional expectation. The interesting thing is that what we've just learned is that under some conditions, being better informed will make you worse off. But the funny thing, and this is the well-known problem with Nash equilibria, is that if everybody knows that you can subsidize trade, everybody has this option to subsidize trades, everybody will do it. The only Nash equilibrium. So it means that if I know that everybody else is subsidizing trades, I will also subsidize and may end up being worse off. But if everybody else is not subsidizing, I will still always have incentive to subsidize because I'm always better off having more information. But then in equilibrium, I will be worse off, which is a very funny. Okay, so concluding remarks. So we've built a tractable model of information diffusion over the counter markets. Initial information connectivity may or may not increase profits. That's what we were discussing. More informed, more connected investors attain higher profits than less informed, less connected investors when investors can disguise trades. But situation is ambiguous when they cannot. Okay. And there may be various applications to centralized exchanges, bank runs, knowledge spillovers, social learning, technology diffusion. And finally, the most important slide. Because it's lunchtime. Yeah? So,